Okay, so I will share my screen in a couple seconds. Before I do that, you know, when we were a couple midweeks ago talking about trauma, there is a lot to unpack and discuss. Chuck and I, just so you know, with the work that he does in trauma, especially for the city of Patterson, we found each other in fellowship one day in 2019 back in Christopher Columbus Middle School. And the work I do as a certified crisis counselor, we just met eye to eye in some topics. And then we had some vision for coming together and presenting to you not only trauma, but crisis. They kind of go hand in hand. And in the sort of mental health first responder crisis and trauma field, I would say crisis work, I'll give you some insight into it and some case studies, but it's sort of like, let's be honest, it's intervention with people who are, it's even before the hospital, it's before the emergency room, it's intervening when they're in their darkest times, wherever they are, it's out there when the spiritual bullets are flying around. Sometimes for people like myself in intervention, we're not even in a foxhole with them. But what we can do is intervene. It's parable of Good Samaritan stuff that Jesus talks about in Luke 10. And then, yes, it is healthcare management, emergency room, and then it's handing it off to trauma specialists like Chuck in intervention. And Chuck's going to go over a lot of details with what Garden State Church is doing right now as we speak. So before Chuck comes, let me go into the topic of crisis and how it relates to trauma. So in my screen here, crisis and trauma, what I want to share is first ABCs of crisis, right? So get comfortable and familiar with just understanding that it means at risk of what? Harming the person, harming themselves or others. It also means being at risk of ending life, of that person choosing suicide. It also means, though, crisis intervention, it's not EMT, it's not EMS, but what it is, because there are plenty of hotline organizations out there, one I've been involved with since 2019, it does mean engaging the person at that level, where they're at, just like Jesus did. Open communication, trust, safety, and help. We have this term, Chuck and I, we talk a lot about, and a lot of us will, many of you will kind of hear from us, whether you were part of that class back in May, that two-part series, we call it below the waterline. Will you go below the waterline? And this all comes from the Bible. Everything, full disclosure for myself, when I was on the other end of the line, and I even skipped the line and went to the hospital during my trauma and my series of events back more than 10 years ago. I would say to you that all the healthcare management and crisis intervention, care management, therapy, professionals, psychologists, therapists, you name it, everything comes from the Bible. It really does. And the part about below the waterline, and I heard this once in a workshop when I was attending at a public school, one of my son's public school workshops, is they talked about a lot about with the kids at that time going below the waterline. And what that means is, I'm going to show you in the metaphor, is it comes from Proverbs 25. The purpose of a person's heart are deep waters, but one who has insight draws them out. So what we're talking about is that iceberg analogy. You know, everything that I do in the work with my fellow crisis counselors on these hotlines is above the waterline. It's everything that's unraveling. It's everything in the individual that's coming unglued right before our scenes. But below the waterline is really where trauma exists, okay? Everything there that you can see, we know when we know that metaphor of that iceberg analogy, we're just seeing just a little bit, just a tip of what really is going on with individuals inside themselves, whether it's in their heart, in their minds, and with their emotions. It really is challenging for them. And of course, no one knows what's going on with individuals, but just know that because God has empowered disciples with just skills of being open and confession It means there is hope out there for other people who are outside the church. So what do I mean by that is because God is with us even during our deepest deep water moments, our deepest crisis moments, God is with us. He is with them. Who? Everyone who is in crisis. Isaiah 43 verse 2, when you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. Don't be afraid. I've redeemed you. I've called your name. You're mine. When you're in over your head, I'll be there with you. When you're in rough waters, you will not go down. When you're between a rock and a hard place, it won't be a dead end because I am God, your personal God, the Holy of Israel, your Savior. Now, these verses, amongst many of them, when I was at my loneliest in my adulthood, I had to fight for God to be like real to me when he was there, but he is there. But for a lot of people, they don't really feel any of the presence of God, whether you're Christian or not. Why? Because crisis can be a slippery slope, and it's so easy to fall into crisis. I obviously see it a lot in the work that I do. You know, it's, let's face it, when people are coming in on a hotline, they're telling me things like, I can't get through today. Today is the day I'm going to end life. And how it works is, well, not, I don't really want to say how it works. What happens and what the healthcare management field can sort of envelope itself and understand is, you know what, this is a schema chart. I've showed this before in some other mental health classes, is sometimes it could be a very simple, trivial event, but what's going on in a person deep inside in the deep waters, it could trigger some event, could like a maladaptive behavior, something could just trigger an event in a loop where the person is in their mind, just racing, ruminating, just unraveling. They may not be showing it physically, but in their hearts and in their minds, they are in crisis. You know, just an example there, it's kind of trivial, but it is true. Friend doesn't telephone me on my birthday. They're already feeling worthless. The thoughts are ruminating, it's cycling, behaviors are rounding and circling. It's just unraveling for them. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to get open. I want to give you a few cases that I've actually shared these cases at the leadership meeting early on this year and in some of our, you know, very intense crisis classes that we've had, both Chuck and I have had with outside in the secular world with the city of Patterson, as well as with the church. You know, Reagan was, these are everyday people, okay? And kids, let's be honest. These are kids too. I can tell, I know it. We've been trained. It goes as young as elementary school. So Reagan was an individual who came in on the line, and it was about a year ago, I remember, actually a year and a half. And I'll just say she was exchanging nude photos of herself with somebody else, Snapchatting, texting, whatever. So she came in on the line. She asked a lot of questions like, look, I don't know what to do. I don't know. I can't go to the cops. What do I say? Can't speak to any family. What do I tell them? Because what that person who had those nude photos said, if you do not give me $2,000, I will expose your photos to the entire community. Okay, so these are, it's called sexploitation. For some reason, there was a lot of this going on about a year and a half ago. Something had to do with TikTok I was reading about. Anyways, I had one online. She had questions. She didn't know where to go. She couldn't go to her parents. Just imagine what she had, if she had to go to her parents, what would she say, right? So for her, her thinking was, suicide right now is realistic. So part of what our role in that moment there is really just to help the person get to a calm. Now, Emily is somebody like you and me. Emily was dealing with work stress. She was an in-home nurse practitioner for the elderly. And she was coming in on the line just telling me about, like, she can't go to work. She's stressed out. She's overworked, overdone. She's afraid of letting her boss down. And more importantly, she was afraid of letting her clients down. All the elderly people that she loves to take care of, she was just burnt out and exhausted. Now, for her, her unraveling and her above the waterline was self-harming. She told me, look, I've been clean for 20 days or whatever it was, 20 weeks. Her coping is self-harming. Now, the one act of rescue I do remember was someone who came in on a line, and first thing that person, she told me was, look, I'm ready to jump on the train tracks. Just don't tell anybody where I am. I'm just letting you know I'm ready to jump on the train tracks. So this was a challenging case in the sense that, of course, I had my supervisor there helping me out. One thing she did do is as we were talking and actually we were texting back and forth, she told me where she was. She started revealing her location. Now that gave me, as a crisis counselor, a signal that she wants help. Now, what was the impact for her? Well, what I want to do is tell you what I, well, my supervisor helped me get to her, help her get to a calm that possibly we can help others out. And one thing that was challenging was, okay, if I call the cops or call the EMS, she's going to jump. So what do we do? So the supervisor told me, here's a question you can ask. What does help look like to you today? Interesting enough, the one sentence she said to me right away was, I just want to know that somebody cares for me. And if you think about it, that's what we're experiencing either in ourselves or with other people or people who are in danger of harming themselves or harming others or just in danger themselves in their heads. They just want to know that somebody cares about them, right? And it's hard enough to truly believe that, is God there? Is he real? Does he care for me? The opposite of crisis. Let's destigmatize, because that may have been some pretty heavy, real sort of situations. It's true. It happens. And also I want to make us aware that in the church, we can go through crisis in our minds. We can. The opposite, though, of crisis, I like to sort of normalize things and make it sort of reframed up to say, yes, we know it's calmness. We know it's stability. We know it's coolness, right? Some of the goals of the crisis counselor is to build rapport, identify some solutions, achieve a calm safety plan. And we don't just, it's a high volume area. So we don't just take people and say, great, you're good, move on. We actually equip them. We actually try to help them so that they can, when their crisis or panic attack comes again, they can handle it. So when they're under duress and they're in mental stress, I liken it to not a mental illness, but a mental disorder. See, my therapist helped me with, you know what, Carlito, your mental illness is, if you think about it, a mental disorder. All it really means is the word disorder. It just means it's out of order. She helped me reframe things so that I today, for myself, understand that everything I do in a mental healthy way is trying to put my life in order every day. So the opposite of disorder is order. That's all it is. And that's really what people are going through, is disorder, trying to get to order. And I bring this up because, well, you know, there are some states of mind that we, I'm of the school of DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. And all that really means is, you know, a lot of us kind of understand there's rational mind and there's emotional mind, right? The emotional mind, or really emotional mind, is any of that above waterline or below waterline stuff that we showed you in that metaphor. Rational mind, we all know rational, sort of that introvert, maybe that lawyer type, that, that sleuth, that detective, that person is very logical. Well, in my own therapy, some of the best place to really reside, if you will, and to practice sort of your behaviors in a mental, healthy, safe way is in wise mind. It's a combination of both, because we don't really neglect the emotional mind as well as the rational mind, but based on past experiences, I feel this, I know this, so I will do this. And the cool thing about us here at church is wisdom. We want wisdom. We all want wisdom. We love wisdom. Here's just the screenshot dictionary version of wisdom. Quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment, the quality of being wise. Awesome. We all want that. Check it out. Biblical wisdom. How cool is if we layer on top of wisdom, biblical wisdom. Just a screenshot version from my phone, putting in wisdom. James 1:5, any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. Proverbs 1:2, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. One sort of side tidbit, I kind of told this to the campus kids about a month ago, is, you know, the Lord gives wisdom. So a lot of us think like, oh, great, I can just find the wisdom. It's in some sort of box and take it out. And well, actually, to be honest with you, you've got to walk the life and learn through mistakes. And there you'll get wisdom. quite frankly, it's you got to face your fears, walk with your fears, learn biblically from your mistakes, and learn what God's saying is, come to me, come to the Bible, look how Jesus did it. Practical scriptures. And I'll end with sort of a practical scenario that is real life that happened recently this year to one of our very own. I'll mention what she did. Oh, sorry. So practical scriptures, 2 Corinthians 10, 4, verse 5. Just for the sake of time, I do want to focus on verse 5. A lot of what we can do in crisis management is helping the person get to a calm and a stable mindset. To do that, they have to take captive every thought. They really do. We try to teach them coping skills. We do employ and help them with some coping skills, some mindfulness to help them do exactly that, take captive every thought, and then trying to stabilize it. We, though, have the advantage as disciples. We know the next step. Okay, I've stabilized my mind. What do I do next? Open the Bible. Let me make it obedient to Christ. Proverbs 14, verse 20. He who is slow to anger has great understanding and profits from his self-control. That also speaks to the mind. I'll admit, anger was a big thing in my life growing up as a kid, as an adult, you name it. Then I started to learn self-control. Again, it's that whole wisdom, and I had to walk it, learn from my mistakes. But then I understood that what God was saying is, you got to walk it and walk with me and learn how to grow. Proverbs 23:23 says, learn the truth and never reject it. Get wisdom, self-control, and understanding. Again, it's out there. It's not in a box. We can't just open up wisdom and find it and be like, whoa. We unfortunately have to walk it and live a life as a disciple. Now, one thing, I'm going to put this up on the screen. This is just so that people can be equipped and just know and be aware that there is crisis counseling help as easy as texting to 741-741 or 988 also is a resource. You can actually text home to 988. That's the rebrand. 988 is a rebrand of the National Suicide Hotline. I do want to end with the parable of the Good Samaritan. Luke 10 is an awesome chapter. It's such an awesome chapter. There are two things in it. One, in verse 27, Jesus quotes, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And he adds to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy, he's quoting Deuteronomy 6, verse 5. He adds to it the four or five words he adds, and with all your mind. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. Jesus was the first awesome mental health counselor. He added to scripture. I have no problem Jesus adding to scripture. Parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, a few months ago, it was before, I think it was before Easter, Sonia, I asked her if I could share this. Sonia, you know, she actually ran into somebody in her town that was, Sonia Rosario was, you know, she ran into somebody in her town that this individual was going through a panic attack. And this individual later on, months, weeks later, he told me exactly what happened in that episode, is he had so much anxiety and stress from work. I think we've all had that. But he even had people, he was delivering some, you know, he was in a truck, he's trying to deliver some supplies, and he got lost. So his supervisors and his coworkers were yelling at him on the phone, cursing him out. So he pulled into, I think it was a Quick Check or something, and he had to get out, and he walked the street and was in a panic mode. So Sonia approached him and said, you know, are you okay? Are you doing all right? What's, you know, how are you? She basically engaged him and she comforted him. So he was going through his panic attack and he was unraveling and eventually was able to get stable. But later on during that conversation, she said to him, you know, I know of somebody in our church who runs a men's mental health support group. Here's his information, blah, blah, blah. Later on, I reached out to him, we connected, we texted each other. And then later on, he ended up coming to one of our support groups. And during that support group, he loved it, he was participating, he engaged. And then after that, Rick Soto and I started studying the Bible with him. And I tell you this because amongst us today in our community, there is so much going on crisis-wise. We certainly don't know what people are going through, the analogy of that sort of iceberg. But when it comes undone, there is trauma going on. People our advantage really as Christians is we know how to get open and we know where to get open. But unfortunately for others out there who don't have God in life, they just don't know what to do. So they don't know where to go. So one of the things that, you know, Sonia did was just connecting him and engaging him. It wasn't about trying to fix his life, trying to be an EMT, EMS person. It was just, hey, let me engage you. And in Luke 10, I love the version in AMP. It says, when the parable of the Good Samaritan Jesus was teaching, he talks about how it wasn't sympathy or pity. It really is what the version in AMP says. It says, but a Samaritan who was traveling came upon him. And when he saw him, he was deeply moved with compassion. And isn't that us? We have the ability to have compassion for the lost and those who are going through crisis and trauma. So I'll end there. I'll hand it over to Chuck so he can take you through again. He'll have his sort of metaphor too about the iceberg and a little bit more about what's going on underneath in terms of trauma. So thanks everyone. And I'll hand it to Chuck.
Thanks, Carlito. Appreciate that. And I just want to say thank you to the Health Empowerment Group. The last midweek, I got to share a little bit relating trauma to sleep, but I appreciate the opportunity tonight to really be able to dig into the trauma a little, into some more details that we weren't able to go into the last midweek. So I appreciate this. So here, trauma, racial trauma, the goal is to grow and awareness, right? To grow an awareness, if it's awareness of ourself or being aware of someone that we may see that may be going through trauma. So what is trauma? Usually, and I shared this the last midweek, so I'm gonna go through a couple of these slides pretty quick and then we'll get in a little deeper. But usually it's two categories, is invasion and abandonment. So invasion is when something happens that creates damage, and abandonment is something that didn't happen or something that's missing to a person that causes damage. All right, so two categories affect four aspects of people's lives: emotional, physical, sexual, and spiritual. So the two categories I just mentioned, the invasion and abandon, are affected in all four of these areas in some way or another. So what I wanna do right now is I wanna do a little exercise just to help us to be able to try to understand some of this. So emotionally, physical, sexual, and spiritual, invasion or either abandonment, I want us to think about how does this apply, and you can put in the chat, to Jonah's life and what he went through. How was Jonah affected traumatically in these areas? And you can put in the chat. Physical, emotional, spiritual, yeah. Going overboard, that's like a bandit, he's a bandit. Spiritual, alone, yeah, left. Exactly. Yeah. Invaded by fish, yes, definitely, cold. Yeah. Yep, emotional, spiritual. Yeah, amen. Emotional, spiritual, abandonment. Yep. Yes. And you can apply those through to abandonment or invasion. They would really both apply. Because Jonah was abandoned spiritually. But then also, if you think about it, there was some invasion spiritually because God, you know, had them swallowed by a whale. So you can apply a lot of these situations. The only one that doesn't apply to Jonah is the sexual trauma. All right. So one other person in the Bible that I want to drop down and get you guys input about as well. Okay, and this person is Joseph. How would you apply Joseph to these different traumas? Yeah, everybody, all of them, all four, all of them. The two categories and the four descriptions, right? All of them apply. Yes, every single one of them. Every single one. Yep, exactly right. Very good. Yes, all of them, every single one. So we all know the story, and we can put each one of these somewhere in his story where they affected him traumatically, right? So I did that little exercise because I wanted us just to have an idea of what trauma is, how it can affect us. Uh-oh, sorry, guys. Whoa, one minute. We're here. Okay, let me just close this. So I wanted us to do the exercise so that we can have an idea of how trauma may be affecting us in some way. Because really, the truth is, all of us have experienced trauma some way or another. It's just a matter of us recognizing it and being aware of it so that we can address it. And I can tell you, for me, I know when the whole George Floyd thing happened, I was really moved to want to do something. And so I went to get trauma training, and specifically racial trauma. And so I had a passion for this. I wanted to take it to the community. And what I found out was that I had my own trauma, my own racial trauma and trauma that I needed to face and deal with and really learn and understand before I can go and help somebody else. You know, so it was eye-opening and really revealing, but it was very beneficial because it brought me healing and ways, and now I know to identify different things and to be able to address it. So trauma does affect us. It does affect us in many ways. It can affect us from how our body reacts to things. And this book I talk a lot about, you guys probably heard me speak about it before, The Body Keeps the Score. You know, our body reacts to trauma that's in our life. And so that's an outward way of it being kind of just being shown. But also emotionally, our body and ourself is affected by trauma as well. And that's more like inward. You know, we can have different things like an emotional pain of anger, mood swings, insomnia, insecurity, poor self-esteem, holding on to grudges, difficulty in forgiving others, lack of social communication. And these are just a few, you know. So these are the things that are signs that are like, hey, you know what? I need to address some trauma. I need to get some input and some help to be able to go after this. Or I need to encourage someone. Not tell them they need to go get help with trauma, but just encourage them, love them. Kind of like Carlito was talking about, how we need to love people and really help them to feel like they're loved and cared for. And then as we do that, we can kind of be able to help them along the way. So the goal is for us to be determined to be free. And I'm not gonna get into a lot of the healing process and stuff, but just this basic point here. Just if we have a determination, you know, Carlito was talking about loving the Lord, the God with all our heart, soul, strength. Like, that's a determination. We want to give our all and our best to God. So if we have a determination to want to see something, to do something, it's going to happen. And the same with trauma being addressed or being acknowledged in our lives, we have to have a determination to really want to be saved. And, you know, like, if we can't see and we're having a problem being able to see, hopefully we'll go and get some help, right? I know I had to go to the eye doctor. I wear glasses, and I had to get checked to see exactly what prescription I needed and what was going to be the best, you know, script that I would need so I can see clear, you know. And that's the same thing with us, you know. If we're not seeing clearly, do we want to see? You know, do we want to see? Do we want to get the help? And when you think about it, if you can't see physically, we're going to get the help. So spiritually, mentally, we should have that same determination, that same desire to want to see, to want to get the help, you know. And in Matthew 8:22, I'm just going to share about it, but I'm not going to read the passage, but it talks about the blind man that wanted to see. He's determined to see. And, you know, Jesus, you know, puts the mud on his eyes, and then he first asked him if he could see. And he said, no, I could see, but I see, you know, things that look like trees. You know, he could have been like, you know what? That's good. I'm happy. You know, I can see better than I wasn't able to see nothing before. I can see something now. But this man was determined to want to see. So he told Jesus, I can see trees, but I can't see clearly. So Jesus touched them again and helped his clarity to be super clear and plain and simple so he can see completely. This man had determination. And this is determination we have to have if we want to go after being seen. You know, the truth will set us free. You know, and God wants to give us freedom. The process, you know, is going to involve other people, you know, peers, our friends. Is going to involve, sometimes it may involve a professional, and that's okay, you know. And it's going to involve God for sure. You know, God is with us. You know, Psalms 23 talks about how God is with us in the valley of the shadows of death. You know, in the deep, dark times, God is with us. And we have to remember and hold on to that. You know, God is with us. And just really fighting to see and know that God is with us. It's a passage that I share a lot about when I'm talking with different folks about trauma. And it's in 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 and 4. And it's funny because Carlito shared this passage, but he looks at one angle from trauma, I mean, from crisis, and I look at it from a different angle with trauma. So in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3, it says, we are human, but we do not wage war as humans do. We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down the strongholds of human reasoning and to destroy false arguments. So Carlito talked about taking captive. Like, have you thought? What I want to focus on is the stronghold, the strongholds. You know, when there's different things that we're trying to overcome in our life, and it's just like, man, doggone it, this thing is dogging me. It's like, I cannot shake this. Most likely, that's a stronghold. You know, and a stronghold, we have to invite God into our strongholds. We have to invite people. We have to invite, if need be, professionals into our strongholds, because these are things that are just trying to keep us down and trying to keep us enslaved. You know, and Revelations 3:20 talks about, and this is talking to the church and to Christians, it says, if anyone comes and knocks, it's like, I'll open the door and I'm going to come in, you know? And so in our hearts, we have to allow Jesus to come in because he wants to be in that stronghold. He wants to be in our hearts so that our hearts can change and so that we can really overcome these things with him. But we have to invite him in. He's not going to just come. We have to invite him and let him come on in. And then we have to pray to listen to him and hear his voice and pray to be in tune with him in the spirit so that we can navigate through these strongholds with God and come out victorious. So I want to read a story in closing here that really impacted me. I think Some of you guys may have heard it before. And before I read it too, just want to encourage you guys with, we started the peer mental health mentor coaching training this past week. And we have 32 volunteers that are super excited and fired up, that's going to be trained to be mentor coaches to help people with, you know, just dealing with mental health. And so that is the part of the people, but that's really, those are people that's going to fill in the gap between the professionals and the, you know, just the part that's missing. If they can't connect with a professional, this is the need that's going to be met to really help, you know, equip people with tools and just the love. So I'm super excited about that. And that's something we're kicking off now, and prayerfully it'll be available in October or November, but be praying for us, be praying for that. And we're super excited about that. And the story I want to read to you guys is a story of the silversmith. So it's the story of the silversmith. This is referring to Malachi 3, verse 3, says, "And he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver." So this story puzzled a group of Bible study people, and one of the members offered to learn about the process of refining silver and informed them at the next study. He visited a silversmith and watched him at work. He watched the silversmith hold a piece of silver over the fire and let it heat up. The silversmith explained that in refining silver, you must hold the silver in the middle of the fire where the flames were the hottest, to burn away all the impurities. The member then thought about God holding us where the flames are the hottest, to burn away our impurities. Then he thought again about the verse, and he shall sit at the refiner and purifier of silver. He asked the silverman, if it was true that he had to sit there in front of the fire and watch the process at all times. The silversmith answered that not only did he have to sit there holding the silver, but he had to keep his eyes on the silver the entire time. So the entire time to make sure, you know, the testing of the fire. And if the silver was left moments too long in the fire, it would be destroyed. You must leave it long enough to serve the purpose, but not too long, as it will destroy it. The member was silent for a moment, then asked the silversmith, "How do you know when the silver is fully refined?" He smiled and he answered, "Oh, that's easy. When I see my image in it, it's ready." So I just want to encourage us with that. I mean, this is an awesome, awesome story, you know, and Jesus, God is always trying to refine us. And the goal is for us to see his reflection as he's trying to refine us and purify us. So, amen, guys. And just the last thing here, references, you know, the Allender Center's Reconnect. These are some podcasts that are really good, that's connected to trauma and family trauma, and Cal Spears, Wild at Heart. And then, like I said, we're going to be having the mental health ministry coming soon. So these are some resources, and pray and hope that this was helpful for you, encouraging, and help you to dig a little deeper. Thank you.